Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. This is the final week to see Berkshire Theater Group's production of the Tennessee Williams classic Cat on a Hot Tin Roof in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. It ends its run this coming Saturday. Jim Beaver plays the doomed patriarch of the family, Big Daddy. Beaver is an actor best known for his roles on the CW's Supernatural and HBO's Deadwood, where he played Ellsworth, a prospector with a good heart and, like everyone else on that show, an incredible affinity for creative cursing. He also recurred on FX's Justified and several other television shows and has appeared in films and on stage. He's a playwright, a film historian, and a television and film writer. I met Jim Beaver at the Berkshire Theater Group's Fitzpatrick Mainstage last week. You were here 31 years ago. What's it been like to be back?
It's been really wonderful. When I was here 31 years ago, I was here very briefly for a sort of workshop reading of a play I had written. And I was at the lower end of my experience and sophistication, let's say. And I was just agog at this place. I still am. I walk through the halls and I see the posters of the people who've worked here and the photographs, and I'm still a little astonished that they let me in. But it's been a really terrific experience coming back here. As I say, I was here only for a few days that time for the reading of my play, but this time I've been able to stay for weeks now and work on this great play, which any actor worth his salt wants to do, Tennessee Williams, and this is a great one. I'm having a wonderful time here.
How did you come to be a part of this production? When did you get the call and from whom?
My agent called me and said they want to know if you want to play Big Daddy in Stockbridge, and I said, how do they know who I am? Oh. And but I had been making noise for some time with my representatives about wanting to do some theater, and I think one of them put a bug in somebody's ear here. It was, as far as I was concerned, it was completely out of the blue and surprising, and I was really excited, especially because I had been here before and I'd seen productions here and I knew the level of the work and I knew the history of the place. So I thought, yes.
You live on the West Coast with your daughter, but it was still relatively easy for you to come over here for a couple months.
Yeah, she can't get out of the garage. No, she's got very nice people who look after her while I'm traveling. And as an actor these days, you can't count on working constantly in Los Angeles. You have to travel. And for some reason, they wouldn't bring the theater to me, so I decided to come here.
What is your process for developing the character, for developing the role of Big Daddy?
The first step in my process was utter surprise. I had read the play. I'd read all of Williams, practically all at once, years ago when I had been asked to direct a Williams play of my choice. So I read them all, but that had been the last time I had really looked at Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. I'd seen the film a few times. I knew it was very different from the play. So my first reaction upon looking at the script was utter surprise, because first off, I read Act One, and I saw that Big Daddy's not in Act One. And I thought, wait a minute, is my memory playing tricks? Did I just sign up for a bit part? and then I read Act Two, and then I started shaking. The play itself is a mountain for performers, and Act Two is a mountain for two of those performers, and a mountain within a mountain. It scared me. It scared me a lot. I hadn't done a play with that much dialogue in quite some time. It was really scary. This was a couple of months before we started rehearsals. I spent all of that 2 months working really hard to get the lines down. And I got them down just about by opening night. it was frightening. Of course, you know, there are some great actors who've played this role. Several of them have left visual records of those performances, and it can be really daunting when you start thinking like that. So I try to stop thinking like that. I try to think about who this guy is and who he isn't. He's often portrayed as a sort of aristocratic to the manor born sort of fella who, because he's hugely rich, he owns a gargantuan plantation. A lot of people, I think, mistakenly fall into the trap of forgetting that he started out as a field hand. He worked his way up by dint of sheer muscle and determination, and not because somebody left him 28,000 acres of cotton. I've tried to keep the rough edges on him. He's dressed really well. He's not an unsophisticated man. He may be a man who sometimes doesn't care about sophistication. He's a man who's taught himself. He quit school at 10, he says in the play, and yet he's probably the most worldly wise character on the stage. If it's not street knowledge, it's cotton knowledge, I guess, because he worked his way up from nothing, and he sees the world in a really sophisticated way, especially for the Deep South. Not that people in the Deep South, I mean, you got your Dora Welty and Faulkner coming out of the Deep South. It's not a place where stupid people are the only things that thrive. My gosh, no. But among the people that he circulates with, among his circle, he's very, very wise and very, again, that word, sophisticated. I just tried to play him as a man who hasn't spent much of his life saying exactly what he thinks and feels because of conventions and wanting to live the part of the Southern aristocracy. But there's a thing my late wife used to say about plays and about scenes. Why is today the special day? Why are we looking at these people today and not yesterday or the day after? And in this play, the reason is very clear. It's the day that Big Daddy has supposedly been told that he does not have cancer, that he's going to live a lot longer. That new lease on life that he thinks he has, being the operative term, releases him, gives him a feeling of a freedom from having to live by the constraints he's lived under for a long time. He suddenly doesn't care what anybody thinks. So his language throughout the play is precisely what's on his mind rather than what's sort of sugar-coated for society. And, of course, that's very surprising to everybody around him.
You mentioned your late wife, and she passed away from cancer. Does that personal experience, that pain in your personal history, affect the way you play the role or the way you think about it?
Well, certainly the thought has crossed my mind at times, but the interesting thing about that connection that you mentioned is that while I was there with her during her illness, even now I don't know what it was like for her. I know what she said. I have some senses of her feelings and regrets, but deep down inside, I can't possibly know what another person felt about anything, even two people as close as we were. And so it becomes, as in most acting, it becomes an exercise in imagining yourself in another person's situation and mindset and attitude. And for me, that comes very easily because it doesn't have to be the particulars of cancer. For example, one reviewer of the play tweaked us a bit because Big Daddy holds his stomach a lot in discomfort. This reviewer thought that maybe we were playing up too much the idea that this cancer is going to destroy him any moment. He should be hiding it if he wants to show how strong he is. He had some pretty interesting reasons why I shouldn't be holding my stomach throughout the play. But my experience is I had an appendectomy when I was 4, and I remember walking around after that for a week or two at least, and Big Daddy has just come back from exploratory surgery. So I'm not really playing the cancer. I'm playing he's still got an incision that hurts. Mm-hmm. And so I don't need to know necessarily what it feels like to have cancer. Physically, though, I do know what it feels like to have an incision in your belly and to not be comfortable with it yet because it hasn't healed yet. And fear, the fear of dying, that has been so much a part of Big Daddy's character in the previous months leading up to this play. Well, it doesn't have to be cancer. We've all had things we're terrified of. We've all got things that we worry about and look forward to with dread. And so I just put myself there and I go, okay, I know what that feels like. As you mentioned, the situation with my wife, Cecily, she had her own fears, but I had fears as well. What was going to happen if she didn't survive? What was going to happen to our child, to me, to our life? What was going to happen if she did survive, but it was an uncomfortable and bad survival? All of those fears are things that, while they're horrible when they're happening, they're things that actors are blessed occasionally with the ability to take and say, okay, I know this feeling. I know what it looks like. I can project it. I've done a couple of jobs since her passing where I had to play people who were either losing a spouse or had lost one. And I've had people in the production say, how could they make you do this? How could, knowing my history, how could they make you play a scene like this? And I always tell them, it's a blessing to me because it gives me a chance to take this horrible sow's ear and make a tiny little silk purse out of it. I find it useful. So anything that happens in my life is fodder for trying to express something greater if I can find a way to use it. And that's with pain and fear. I've got enough of those in my life to know what Big Daddy's dealing with.
You've played a Vietnam vet a few times and are actually a veteran of the conflict in Vietnam.
When I first started making a living in Hollywood, which is a very different thing from being in Hollywood, I was getting a lot of Vietnam-related jobs. First, it was writing television. At that time, the studios were finally beginning to be less afraid of the subject of Vietnam. And so they were on the lookout for people who could write, who had experience in the war. And so I got a lot of jobs that way. And then also got jobs playing Vietnam vets. I went in to audition for Norman Jewison's film, In Country. And I was just a little nobody. I didn't even have an agent, but somehow I got this audition. This film was all about Vietnam vets and the difficulty they had returning after the war. And I said, Mr. Jewison, you know the scene where the bulletin board is covered in photos of all these veterans while they were in Vietnam? And he said, yeah. And I said, is this the sort of thing you had in mind? And I held up a picture of myself in Vietnam, and it might or might not have had something to do with my getting cast.
You are, as we've mentioned, a writer, and the director of this production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, David Auburn, is also a playwright and screenwriter. Do you think that the act of also being a writer influences the way you perform or the way he directs?
I can't speak very well to the notion of direction because it's a mystery field to me. I've directed once or twice. I don't know that I have any talents in that direction, but I think writing and acting spring from, in large part, the same place, and that is an ability to relate to other people's situations. I've been in some ways cursed in my life because every time some kind of issue comes up or an argument or something, there's part of me that listens to the other person's side and goes, oh, that actually makes a lot of sense. Now, that can be helpful at times, but it can also make you very indecisive when you have a position of your own you're fighting for, and everything the other person says seems to make sense because you can put yourself in their shoes. For the theater, for performance arts, I think it's an invaluable thing. It's what allows an actor or a writer to create characters that are very different from him. There's the old saying, at least among actors, that the bad guy in the movie never thinks he's a bad guy. He's doing what he thinks is right by his lights. Now, he may be aware that there are laws he's breaking, but he's doing the best for himself as best he can. And if there's collateral damage, well, that's unfortunate. But unless someone's a psychopath, it's a human being with his own viewpoint. And that's what we try to convey both as writers and as actors, is viewpoints of the characters we're playing. I think it's a real gift to have that, and I think having it propels a lot of people into these fields. If you spend all your life looking at other people and imagining that maybe you have an idea of what they feel like at this moment, there aren't a whole lot of fields that require that. And writing and acting are maybe the most prominent of the ones that do. I think even the most egocentric actors, if they're good actors, they've got a real sense of what other people feel like.
My entry point into your career is my favorite television drama, bar none, HBO's Deadwood. So in preparing to come over here, I said, all right, well, I won't just talk to him about a television show that has been off the air for years and years. So obviously I'll learn a bunch more. You are a film historian, an author, a playwright we've mentioned, an actor we've mentioned, and a screenwriter we've mentioned. You're also a veteran, as we've mentioned. How do you fit all of that into a life? How have you done all of these things?
I don't know. Considering how much time I sit around doing nothing, people are always talking, you know, you've done so much. And I look back at my own list of credits and I go, well, I guess I have. Mm-hmm. But there's never been a moment in it where I felt like, wow, look at everything I've done. How could I possibly fit that in? It all fit in really nicely. Despite the list of credits, you know, there are long stretches without work, and there certainly were in the days before Deadwood. Deadwood changed the world for me, really turned my career around, because that was the first time anybody knew who I was, and it was the first time anybody cared who I was. Yeah, if you just make lists of things, it does look like a lot, but I still feel like I've got more than all those lists put together ahead of me, and which probably isn't true, but it feels like it. It feels like, no, there's still a lot to do. There's still things I haven't done that I want to do, but at the same time, yeah, there's a real satisfaction with what I've been able to pull off while I was sitting around in the middle of the night watching Tarzan movies.
I have to let you go because you have a performance tonight, but thank you very much for your time and your thoughtful answers to my questions.
Oh, well, thank you for asking such thoughtful questions, and not just the usual ones I get, which relate to what's my favorite episode of Supernatural, or why did you wear that shirt today?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jim Beaver is playing Big Daddy in Tennessee Williams' Cat on a Hot Tin Roof on Berkshire Theater Group's Fitzpatrick Main Stage through this coming Saturday. Links to more information are posted, along with a longer version of this interview, at wamc.org/roundtable. The interview is also available via podcast. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.